Yeah. I do this all the time. All
right, hey, cool. Boris, how are you doing?
Good, great.
So it's been about, what, 5 years since
something like that,
talked?
Yeah. At least, yeah.
Yeah, you're still a little upset about that? I wouldn't say upset, but...
No, I'm not upset. It was, it was a good conversation. I talked about the IDE in Visual Studio, which is what I was working on. And a couple years later, as we kind of delivered all this work that we did, I ended up getting famous for more what we didn't do than what we did do.
Sure.
So if you look up my name on the internet, you often find references to IntelliSense and C++ CLI.
Yes.
And I kind of said that we should address this head on.
Let's address it head on.
We should address it head on. So the short story is, years ago after I joined the team, we were really passionate about making language services for C++ significantly better than they were. We felt like we were really falling behind in things like refactoring, IntelliSense, advanced colorization, just all the things that you would expect from the top-of-the-line tools in the market. Mm. And this is a hard problem for C++. It's a language that's more complex. It was designed before tools were ever a thought. Nowadays, when Anders designs features in C#, he actually thinks about the IDE tooling up front. That's a beautiful luxury that the C++ team doesn't have. Mm. So the goal of this project was, let's build a foundation that can understand code much better than we had before so that we can build these great features in the IDE. Mm-hmm. And as any kind of significantly ambitious project, we didn't estimate it quite perfectly.
Sure.
And we ended up having to make some really tough cuts at the end of Visual Studio 2010. And that big cut was removing IntelliSense for one release from a language feature that's really important to a lot of our users, which is IntelliSense for C++ CLI.
Yeah.
Now, the backlash was so significant that there was this quote on a blog post that I wrote, and you can see this. It says, I seem like a nice guy, but please stop slapping me around. And it taught me a lot about customers. Uh-huh. And, we make a lot of assumptions sometimes about how many users use certain things. And we had data about C++ CLI, and we knew it wasn't 80% of our users. It was more like 20%, 15%. Mm-hmm. But you take something away, and you're going to get passionate responses.
Absolutely.
And so all I can say is that we never had that intention. It was really just we were stuck in a hard place. And we've since announced that we're rectifying that in the next version of Visual Studio.
Yes.
So IntelliSense is coming back. And with all sorts of new good features generally across all of C++ and C++ CLI that we'll unveil over the next few months.
Absolutely.
That'll be, I hope that people are going to be pretty excited.
I bet they will be.
Not only is it coming back, but it's coming back, better.
Great.
Yeah.
So I'll have to get that out there. You on camera.
Our intent was noble.
Okay.
Yes. And we care, and it's just, time. All
sure.
It's just time.
Yeah. And again, like you said, it's a super hard problem.
Yeah. I mean, you could do many talks. In fact, you should.
Yeah.
About the science of trying to build IDE tooling for a language like C++. I actually, one of my favorite talks I ever gave is the one that was really not under the guise of Microsoft or at a conference.
Mm-hmm.
And it was I went to give a talk to a compiler class at UCSD, and I just decided to talk about, compilers are no longer just used to code gen. They're used to do semantic analysis and IDE tools that have to operate live with very different constraints. Mm-hmm. And, that means you have to design them differently. And C++ is just frankly designed before that era.
Sure.
And you should do lots of talks about that. I think those would be really interesting conversations about how would you even design IntelliSense for C++ or refactoring.
Yes.
I always debate this when I joined the team, and we're going to talk about other things in a minute.
Yes.
But when I joined the team, refactoring was top of mind, and it still is. And it's actually just quote unquote hard, right, with a capital H, to design that for C++. It's just a totally different set of constraints than with Java or C# or a dynamic language like Ruby. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. It's just a matter of the design of those things is scientifically interesting.
So just real briefly, though, I mean, clearly when you think about all of the libraries that you're bringing into your IDE context, and which translates to all the code.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if you decide to write using C++ in an object-oriented way, then one could argue, well, then that would have to bubble down to all the libraries you're using, clearly. So I guess the point I'm trying to make is, with something like C#, you don't really get a choice, right? You get a...
Correct.
I mean, it's a...
Yes.
It was built with the IDE in mind, as you said, with the CLR in mind, specifically.
The CLR, the BCL, so the class library, a specific set of naming conventions that have stuck after a decade.
Yeah.
All those things are true. C++ is utter chaos. Utter chaos. I mean, if we include our larger community as including C, which I do, then it is unbelievably chaotic. There are people who... you know, still roll their own string classes because we didn't settle on one early enough in the history of the language.
Mm-hmm.
Or there isn't one that meets quite the needs. And in fact, I think any string class you pick in the native world will probably not meet a specific need that you have.
But you're able to roll your own very efficiently.
Well, you can, and people do. And I think we talk a lot about modern C++ programming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things have changed from the 90s. It's not just C with classes now.
Mm-hmm.
I think people understand the things you can do with templates. We have language features now that allow kind of functional style programming in a better way. You've had conversations about that with Herb Sutter.
Yes.
But the fact is you have this huge amount of code out there and behaviors in people, not behaviors in code, behaviors in humans that take a long time to change.
Mm.
So I think, yes, when you look at C++, it's chaotic. It's not one way of doing things.
Excellent. Now it's great catching up with you again. So we had to talk a little bit about history, man.
Yeah.
But let's kind of step into today now and talk about games.
Yes.
And native code and C++ specifically.
Absolutely.
What's going on?
So, over the past couple of years, mm-hmm. Specifically the last year, I've shifted my focus, and some of our team has been starting to really think about what can we do to make game development better. Now, the reason is we think gaming has always been one of our key, you know, types of customer. Games are predominantly still built in C++, whether that's because it's cross-platform, because it has the best performance. All of these reasons are obviously there.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a vibrant community that's constantly replenishing itself. This is not, you know, a bunch of old applications that are being maintained. This is constant new blood. But what we noticed is also, we think there's just a growth in terms of games are no longer just for the Xbox and for the PC. These are no longer giant organizations building games. We think there's just more and more people have the opportunity to get into game development. And we think games have shown themselves to be very successful on a broad set of platforms.
Mm.
Whether it's mobile, whether it's web, whether it's social-oriented gaming, or just... you know, casual gaming, and then the broad range of visuals that people are doing, from traditional, you know, platformer 2D to incorporating more and more advanced 3D techniques to all the way, you know, the 3D metaphor. And we're even finding those kinds of things in casual games. So people tend to kind of think casual game does not mean advanced coding, right? It's just simple Flash stuff. But casual game tends to really just mean it's a short game. It's an easy game to get into. But people are differentiating themselves in that space in really amazing ways. So we think the larger software community mm-hmm. has a lot to learn from gaming and game development.
Yeah.
And so that's why we're interested in it. That's why I'm interested in it.
Yeah.
In fact, some of that interest goes beyond development.
Mm.
I think people are just now realizing in the last 2 years or so the power of game design. There's a lot of talk about how you can incorporate techniques that game developers have been using for decades that create addiction, that create motivation, that create drive in order to get people to use your application or do the task that you're trying to do.
Interesting.
I think the example I would use is Foursquare. Foursquare is... you know, a location, mobile location-aware service to just check into to restaurants and bars and places where your friends can see that you're there. Mm-hmm. And the way they motivate people to do it is they just took a page out of Microsoft's book with achievements. I'm taking a lot of credit there for Microsoft.
Yes.
But the idea of achievements where you create a meta game outside of the core purpose, which is now you can unlock badges. You know, if you go to 3 places in one night, then you get a badge. Hmm. Those techniques come from game design. And I think a lot of people are realizing that the power of that field.
Sure.
And applying it to all sorts of spaces. And then just art.
Yeah.
You know, if you think of a software team, I think by default, if you're building an app, mm-hmm. if we've been around for the last couple of decades, just building an app, we would compose our team of primarily developers. We'd obviously think about testing tasks. Mm-hmm. We'd think about project management. Mm-hmm. I think for most software projects, art direction and art creation
yes.
would fall pretty low on the list. And in game companies, it's the reverse. Art direction and art content dominates, which is no different than, you know, in a movie, there's a lot of, you know, there's camera technicians, and there's also a ton of people doing the storyboarding and the costume design and all those kinds of things.
Sure.
And games are the one area in software where people are using that approach. And I think there's a lot to learn from that as well,
mm-hmm.
Just in general, you know, software development. Can your app be differentiated in that way, as opposed to simply in number of features?
Sure.
You know? So that's all the reasons why I'm interested in the space, and we're looking at what can we do as the C++ team, as Visual Studio,
yeah.
as DevDiv, how can we make game developers more successful? How can I bring more people into that space, and how can I make you actually achieve the result faster and better and
mm-hmm.
you know, help you make money too, I suppose.
Excellent, man. And I mean, and going back to, you know, sort of C++ specifically,
yeah.
You have, for games, I mean, in C++, you have, you know, n number of super high quality, you know, mathematic libraries.
Mm-hmm.
You have
mm-hmm.
physics libraries.
Yeah.
You have 3D libraries. You have et cetera, et cetera. So there's this huge well. I think one of the things that could be really useful for developers would
yeah.
be a way to sort of aggregate all of these libraries in some meaningful way that I could then bring into my favorite IDE, which
absolutely.
Hopefully is Visual C++.
So I agree with you that one of the reasons people are attracted to C++ in the gaming community, or the game development community,
mm-hmm.
is this wealth of pre-existing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think you named it, right? Physics engines, 3D engines, AI, mm-hmm. networking engines even, because you have very specific networking needs
sure.
In games. All of that is true. And I think the community is already there, too, so they kind of drag everybody along in that world. One of the... if you have a lot of experience writing games, if you start off in a big company, if your first job and you want to get into games and you somehow get a job at Electronic Arts or at Bungie,
mm-hmm.
I think you're going to learn there what works, and you're going to develop those kinds of reflexes. And we always use this physics library because it has these needs.
Yeah.
It meets these needs. But I kind of asserted that we want people to come to this space, and we think it's broadening, and it's now small teams of people. You know, 3 people can now build a great game for a mobile device and get great results.
Yeah.
So the knowledge, you're right, and the capabilities of all these libraries have to be brought to you. You can't be going and writing every aspect of the application. And finding the right one for you is an interesting problem. One of the things we're investigating, and we really don't know what we're going to do yet, is can we harmonize? Can we help you pick libraries or understand what are the core types of things that you need to get done? So I think if someone were to ask me, well, I need to write a game. I want to write a game. I've got a great idea.
Yeah.
What do I need? It's pretty easy to tell them, is it going to be multiplayer? You're probably going to need some networking.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a computer player? You're going to need some AI.
Yeah.
Is it going to use my surroundings? Is it doing video recognition of my surroundings? Well, now you're going to really need some kind of spatial recognition ability.
Connect
is where we're at. We'll talk about Connect. And then physics, of course, is the classic one. Most people, that's probably the most popular type of library to not write and just to use. So Bullet is really popular and easy to use and easy to integrate into your application.
Cool.
So I think, yeah, there's a lot we could do to bring those more, to make them more prominent in Visual Studio. Maybe we could make it, you know, we've made it really easy to get extensions in Visual Studio.
Yes.
So why not apply that to libraries? I think that's a great idea.
And also, you know, file, new, C++ app, game.
Yeah.
And then you'd be able to dig into it deeper and say, well, this is going to be like a shoot 'em up, blow 'em up kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know what you call that
in the game
world. And then you automatically get all of the engines required for you to then do your magic. But the thing that I would ask you, you're not necessarily talking about people starting out in programming. You still have to understand how memory works if you're going to use C++. Fair enough?
Sure. I think the point is you desire to know that.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of garbage collection, too. Right? I'm not a zealot. I think garbage collection is really powerful and has helped people get into it. If I were teaching a six-year-old how to program, I probably wouldn't start with, you know, addressing memory and pointers.
Yeah.
That said, it solved one specific problem. Mm-hmm. It solved memory. CPU memory. It did not solve resource management as a whole. And I think a classic thing that people learn in Java and .NET, in Python, mm-hmm. when you get to write more and more complex applications, mm-hmm. you know, you learn to use the using statement, the with statement, mm-hmm. whatever it is in that language, to create deterministic resource cleanup. So if you open up a file in C#, the memory for that object is going to be taken care of for you, but not the file handle. That's going to be disposed at some point for you as well. That might not be okay. Mm-hmm. So if you think of games, you're allocating a lot of stuff on the GPU, whether it's you're sending textures or models or shaders. You need that. The performance expectations on a GPU are really high, and they're very kind of single purpose. And so you need to make sure to reclaim what you need there at the right time.
Yes.
You're getting a frame every 60th of a second. You don't have the luxury of, hey, maybe when it's ready, take that away from the GPU and then replace it with my next thing. So resource management is important to a game developer. And I think that is independent of C++, the language. You have to go learn that stuff.
Of course.
And a great example where you can see this in action is if you look at XNA. Mm-hmm. XNA is very careful about how it uses the CLR and the kinds of types that they make use of in order to get more deterministic behavior. I mean, in hindsight, you know, after all these years working around C++ customers, if I were to name the single most distinctive and best feature of C++, it's destructors. That's it. In fact, one of my colleagues, not on our team, but in the Xbox team, mm-hmm. Pete Eisensee, great guy for you to interview as well.
Great.
He gives talks at the Game Developer Conference every year. This is the industry game development conference. Last year, he gave a talk literally just about destructors. An entire talk about destructors.
Nice.
And it was great. It's a really great feature of the language. I think as a game developer, it's not that you come in saying, hey, I care about memory. Mm-hmm. You care about, I would say, unbelievably good performance.
Yes.
One of the terms we used on our team recently is, it's supernatural performance, right? A game is simulating physics almost better than what the world can do, right? And mm-hmm. faster than the world can do. There's no point in, you know, it's like weather prediction, right? You need to make it faster than the actual real world, otherwise it has zero value. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of games need to give you a supernatural kind of experience. And a lot of that is responsiveness that you can control. It's not like you flip, you know, you want to hit the ball on the, and connect, right? You want to mm-hmm. hit the volleyball thing. Mm-hmm. It's not like every 20 seconds it's going to have a delay on your hand. That is not okay. You need really perfect control over that responsiveness. And that's what keeps people mesmerized
sure.
by the game. And games are the ones that do that more than anything else. You're not mesmerized by Excel. Right?
Well, I mean, that new plugin they have for it that you can load in a million rows is pretty impressive.
It's pretty impressive. And I think using a power, like using the full power of a computer, everyone cares about that.
Yes.
That is not unique to games. I think what makes games different is the responsiveness needs are really high, mm-hmm. and oftentimes it's the experience they're trying to give to the user is one of really strong motivation and fun and mm-hmm. you know, these kinds of emotional reactions.
Absolutely.
And I think all of us care about that in software. Mm-hmm. we usually get into it because we like to build products. We like to build products that affect people.
Yeah.
You know, when Mark Zuckerberg built Facebook, he cared about helping people connect to each other. And I think game developers and game companies, game designers, care about motivating people towards a result. And that's a really good thing to strive for.
Agreed. And to make it easier for developers to be able to compose what you're talking about.
So,
the vision.
You know, C++ is hard enough as it is.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we do? And we're exploring, you know, tools. Well, that's our bread and butter in DevDiff, right? We have languages, tools, and libraries. Those are the big three that we think of.
Yes.
So what kind of tools can we do to help you harness the power of the GPU correctly? Or diagnose a simulation-oriented application. So games often are simulations. You know, you create all these behaviors, and then each frame you just play it out, and users can interact with it. Does that mean we have different kinds of tools necessary? Performance or debugging tools? What kinds of language improvements can we do for games? Why not?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, libraries. You mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one side is, what libraries do we bring together that are already out there in the community? And sometimes I think the community already does a pretty good job of, you know, helping people pick the right ones. And I don't think that we should, you know, pick one to be the framework.
Mm-hmm.
But which additional ones can we bring to bear? And I think our most interesting area right now is looking at Kinect. You know, Microsoft Research is about to publish a Kinect SDK.
Mm-hmm.
This is really exciting. We're seeing people with virtually no support from us have gone and plugged it into their computer and used four or five random libraries from the internet to try to just play with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the imagination that they have is really amazing. And we think Kinect is yet another form of human interaction that games are going to be the first to exploit.
Yes.
Whether that's, you know, it's not even about using GPU like we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, what kinds of interactions can we enable? And there, what you need, again, is going to be, we need to help you recognize things on that the camera sees.
Mm-hmm.
We need to help you do physics, right? Because what you're seeing is only meaningful in the context of physics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now you can understand that something's being deformed or something is bouncing off something else.
Yes.
All those kinds of things are areas that we want to look at in terms of libraries. We don't know exactly what.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're really like the birth stage, you know, of things like Kinect.
Mm-hmm.
But it's absolutely an area that I think MSR and our team are very curious about what's going to happen.
One of the cool things about Kinect, of course, and this is interesting, is, and this is also going to be talked about at MIX, is it does represent the future, a future, or sort of a brave new world of human-computer interaction.
Absolutely.
Because the computer, instead of just getting events from you from a mouse or a keyboard, can now actually look at you, and if it's programmed in the right way, can really start to understand some interesting things. I would argue that native code in particular would be very important for those specific libraries because of your first access on the hardware.
Absolutely.
Blah, blah, blah. So, you know, that's something to talk about as well.
I mean, we really think mm-hmm. that there's a brave new world of applications coming.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're not games. They're going to just be software experiences that are as immersive as games
mm-hmm.
and as interactive as games. And so that's why, you know, when I'm trying to, I can't invent the future. We think our customers are going to do that, right? Developers of broadly, mm-hmm. specifically C++ developers, we believe are going to go create these kinds of things. But in the meantime, I'm thinking, well, what can I look at in the present that can best help me, you know, build things that will make these future possibilities? And so that's why I look at games. Now, the kinds of needs for these next generation applications, I can't formalize them. I don't know them exactly.
Sure.
For sure, using these kinds of advanced sensors is going to be key. Doing the kind of processing to understand the human on the other side
mm-hmm.
in order to interact with it from the computer side, you know,
yeah.
to do the Watson from Jeopardy stuff,
yeah,
is going to require significant processing power.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you think of our two, what we think our two defining characteristics are for our language and our team, it's power and performance. So if you think of the first one, it's you need to be able to leverage all of the power. Mm-hmm. So if it's going to take 1,000 cores or at 3 GPUs mm-hmm. to be able to process human language at the speed at which people say it mm-hmm. and respond back, mm-hmm. so be it. Right? We want to make sure you have full power of that. That's why we invest in parallel programming libraries.
Yep.
On the other hand, when I think of performance, I think of as this is where you need responsiveness and the control. Because responsiveness of an application of a game is not tied to being able to use a ton of CPU. It's about fine-grained control of that responsiveness. Be able to react back to you in a 60th of a second, every 60th of a second. You know? Mm-hmm. And both of those places, we think our language is already well, you know, we've built the right foundation. Now it's just about seeing what people are going to build. And it's going to be a back and forth. I think this is a multi-release problem.
Sure, absolutely.
But it's terribly exciting.
It is. Now let me ask real quickly. One of the things that's interesting to know is, you know, we have a large investment in Microsoft in games, right? We have the Xbox,
oh, yeah.
which is very successful, XDK, which is, you know, there's a lot of native mm-hmm. Libraries in there.
Absolutely.
Who's using Visual C++ over in Xbox world, at least the games we produce?
So, almost every single game studio that I know at Microsoft uses Visual Studio.
Awesome.
If only because I get the bug reports. We have a really tight relationship with the people who build the Xbox development kit. They don't want to go reinvent every single piece, so they actually just extend Visual Studio to target the Xbox. In fact, in Visual Studio 2010, now this is not kind of, you know, big hype new features.
Yeah.
One of the things that we did in the IDE was move to, or in the project and build system, is move to MS Build. And as part of that, we made our project system much more extensible. So we have this feature that is akin to multi-targeting in .NET. Mm-hmm. We call it platform toolset, you know, multi-targeting, because it allows you to say, well, I'm building with, you know, Visual Studio 2010, and that's all the libraries and the compilers, or I could just go ahead and build with Visual Studio 2008. And so you could keep the 2010 IDE, but use the 2008 tools. That feature was really powerful for the Xbox team, because what they're effectively doing is saying, we need Visual Studio as a development tool, mm-hmm. but our target platform is fundamentally different.
Yes.
So we have a different compiler, a different set of libraries, and that used to be a terrible, terrible hack for them to use Visual Studio. Mm. And all that work we did in 2010 allowed us to then help them just be a simple set of, like, they're basically a bunch of XML files, okay. where they used to be just a bunch of reverse engineering.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a really important relationship, and you know, even the features we don't talk about are actually impactful for partner teams like that.
Awesome.
So, yeah, the Xbox is key. And you were asking me earlier, you know, Bungie is no longer specifically a Microsoft studio.
Yeah.
But they're really a great set of, it's an amazing team, and I actually went to talk to them a few years ago when they were still part of Microsoft. Mm. And they're avid users of Visual Studio. It's interesting because they're really a customer, not a partner. Like, they don't build on top of Visual Studio. Mm-hmm. It's not the same relationship as I have with the Xbox team. Mm-hmm. But that's their bread and butter. They build with Visual Studio. Their entire build system is, like, you know, they open a solution and that's their game.
Right on.
You know, I don't know if you've talked to enough teams at Microsoft to know that oftentimes the way we use the product internally is a little bit different from the way customers do.
Sure.
Halo and Bungie are definitely a great example of, they use the product exactly the same way as anyone that I've talked to outside of Microsoft uses it.
Excellent.
You know, by and large, you know, game developers are, in my experience, are good customers of Visual Studio. They like the product. That doesn't mean they're not demanding and they don't want new things, mm-hmm. but, you know, they're I consider them constituents.
Excellent. Very, very cool. And the fact that you mentioned, I don't think, you know, Visual Studio gets enough credit for, particularly in the case of C++, which is really the world's most portable language.
Oh, yeah.
C++. I don't think anyone could argue that. So, is that fact that you can target different things? I mean, the memory model on Xbox is so incredibly constrained mm-hmm. versus just some PC mm-hmm. that, you know, you really have to be controlled. You're only going to be allowed to do so much. I can imagine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think there's, I would agree.
So my what was that, my question?
I don't know what your question was, but
I'll
say something.
You can target many things.
You can target many things. It is, for sure, I think, the most cross-platform language out there. Mainly that not only does it compile for all sorts of things, from elevators that you see to you know, full-on operating systems, but that it allows you to be specific for that platform whenever you want to. So on the Xbox, a great example here would be there may be features you can't use, so you can restrict those out. But there's also conventions that developers create. So exceptions have a much higher cost on the PowerPC processor in the Xbox than they do on an x86 or x64 machine. So Xbox developers, they can use exceptions if they want. We don't block that. The C++ language allows that. Mm-hmm. But you can also not use exceptions. And a lot of them build conventions in their company. You know, we're not going to use exceptions. We're always going to use error codes. You know, this is the biggest religious debate in native code. But here's the key. You can do that.
Mm-hmm.
We allow you to pick. In some ways, that creates more chaos. Because now when you're using a library, maybe you don't realize, oh, they're using exceptions and you're not. So those things always come with a price.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely a value to the consistency across, you know, let's say when you're in the .NET world, that you're always going to be exception-based, and you know, you're always going to have the same naming conventions, and memory allocation is not something you can control, and these kinds of things. But in C++, you have that choice, and that allows it to be a great choice on all sorts of different platforms.
Agreed.
So I think that's one of its values. And, you know, game developers generally, because of things like the Xbox, I've seen sometimes they just don't want to use exceptions ever. But that's fine. That's like their community's choice.
Sure.
And over time, that may evolve as they look at different platforms where exceptions are not as expensive, or, you know, the power versus, you know, the performance penalty you pay for the richness of a library may be sufficient that you then choose the library.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's up to you at the end of the day. If there's one thing you can say about C++, is it definitely does not try to underestimate your capabilities.
Agreed.
It throws you off the chasm into the deep end. And, you know, if you take the time and learn it, you will have access to all this power. The learning curve may be an issue and all these kinds of things, and we want to address that too. There's certain things we can only do so much.
Yeah.
But that's ultimately who we think our developers are, the ones that want to use every bit of it, and they're not using C++ just because they like X language feature, although that happens also.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that
unlimited, they want to be closer to the machine.
Unlimited, yeah. Control and power over the machine.
Right on. And again, all of this doesn't have to say that there's going to be less of a focus on what Anders and company do, because they're rocking and rolling.
Oh, yeah.
Their next language version is going to be amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Target, use the right tool for the job. Eric Lippert's been saying it for years. I've been following his blog, and I've known him since he was doing a lot of JavaScript. But now he's in the C# world. But it's such a good point, right? And for gaming, I mean, here you go. C++. Lots of control, performance,
and
power.
You know what the thing is? When you leave it out to the world, if you look at what the game community has built, they needed a place where they wanted higher level programming. And they came up with stuff. So you look at Lua, a scripting language which most people hadn't heard of, been around for a while, and started to get really popular in games because it was very easy to integrate into native code. That was the key kind of difference. Very, very simple to integrate the interpreter into native code. And so World of Warcraft and all these games use Lua. So, you know, and I'm seeing now with, you know, game engines like Unreal or Unity, they all provide some higher level language, whether it's existing ones like JavaScript or they create their own. So Unreal has their own called Unreal Script. They definitely see the value of being able to express concepts with less code. But that's not how they're going to do their graphics rendering code. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that is, it's, we should absolutely continue as a field of developer tools and a field of computer science to invest in raising the level of abstraction for certain tasks. But you can't lose the to the metal performance as well. I think you got to find the, you know, in a way, to bring it back to the first thing I said.
Yes, exactly.
Interop is actually really important too.
Yes.
You know? And I think we're entering an era of polyglot developers. I think a graphics rendering developer mm-hmm. in games has to know C++ and shader programming, you know, which is a different language. C-like, but it's a different language. Mm. If you're doing the networking side of a game, probably you're going to want to look at some of these very high-performance functional languages like Erlang to write, you know, the server side, which I've seen game companies do. I think you have to become proficient in more than one. And so I'm a big fan of high level, too.
Absolutely.
I'm hoping Smalltalk makes a comeback.
Hey, you know, it is in certain interesting forms.
Exactly.
Hey, great talking to you, Boris.
Thanks, Charles.
And we'll have to come back and
absolutely.
See you again.
Tell you what, at the next one, I'll actually show some of the things we're starting to build, because it's a bit too early still.
Yeah, but we, you know, the people are hungry for information. They want to hear from you guys, so.
I'm glad.
You know, even if we don't talk about specifics, it's good stuff.
Cool.
Take care, man.
Thanks.